Blog Talk Radio.
Got to hear more and more every week.
All right, that's what the lady said. It's Blog Talk Radio. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pennicale.
And this is the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show, otherwise known as Fight Talk Unlimited, and
right.
Other names.
We are unlimited.
Exactly.
Yeah, so from my ordeal, as I was telling you before we got on the air, I was in an emergency room the other night. Tornado. Tornado doesn't go happen very often. But I was at the local 7-Eleven, and there were these four, you know, about maybe 19, 20-year-old punks. They were giving this old lady a hard time. I had to whip four asses. One of them pulled a knife on me and sliced my finger.
Oh, lucky. It was only your finger.
Actually, that's completely bullshit. I was telling people that at work. I was like, oh, yeah, I whip these guys' ass. The truth of the matter is, I was opening a can of fruit for my dog, and it was a pop-pop. And when I was pulling the pop off, it slipped and sliced my finger to like a motherfucker. Thank you. I was right by the sink because it looked like it was a faucet coming out of the top of my hand.
Ah!
And, I hadn't been to a doctor in a couple of years. I just refused to go.
Right.
Even when I had strep throat this year, I went to a minute clinic in the CVS. But the last time I was at a healthcare professional was at the hospital when they thought I was having kidney failure a couple of years ago. And it wasn't, thankfully. I had the same attending physician that I did on Tuesday night. And he was like, oh, nice to see you again. I'm like, hey, you too. And he was like, oh, I remember the doctor said. So I'm like, nope. And he was like, well, I guess I'll see you again in 2 years.
Nice.
So, yeah, so right now the bitch gets tight because it's right on my left pinky. And I'm not sending that email right now. I'm just like a motherfucker. Plus the fact that I work in an office. And when I take calls and I got to take things, yeah, it's not a pleasant experience.
Like when I almost broke my neck and they kept asking me questions, but I had a popped lung and I couldn't breathe. So I was nodding my head and they go, don't move your neck. Can you breathe? Yeah. Moving my neck. Anyway, we have Tom, Psychic Tom. I have a vision.
It sounds like I missed a little bit of nice stuff here at the beginning of the show. What did I miss?
Well, Tom, I'll tell you.
Not because to open dog food.
I was in the emergency room the other night, and I don't go to doctors. I try to avoid them as much as possible. But the other night, I was at a local 7-Eleven, and some young punks around 19 years old were harassing some old lady. So I beat up four guys. One of them pulled a knife on me and sliced my finger.
Whoa!
Actually,
okay.
Tom, that's a completely bullshit story. That's a completely bullshit story that I've been telling people just for, like, to get a laugh out of it. The truth is, I was opening a can of dog food for my dog. I hope I'm opening a can of dog food for my dog. I was eating the alcohol out of the can. And when I popped the top off, it slipped out of my hands and just sliced the living shit out of the top of my pinky. It looked like a faucet was, like, pouring out of my finger. So I had to go get stitches.
I like the first story better. So we'll
much
stick with the first story. Yeah.
Well, anyway, a shitload of MMA over the last weekend and last night. I didn't watch any of the Ultimate Fighter because my computer was being a pain in the ass. And I couldn't. I don't have Fox Sports 1. I'm sorry. I can't afford the big sports network on my cable. No. I don't even know if they have it. I haven't seen any advertisements for it on my cable.
Well,
fortunately,
Rich, you have a rich friend, and that's me, so I can give you the report, okay? So we'll get to it.
Little clips of it. But I did watch all the MMA. We had the UFC Fight Night 28 last night. I got to watch all of that, pretty much. And then, of course, the big one, I don't know if you call it an upset. I really expected Pettis to win, but Henderson went down quick, which was not expected, in my book anyway. He's got his arm tweaked. Pettis secured a nice little armbar on him, but right from the beginning, Henderson was all about the striking, and I thought he had Pettis hurt it a couple times, but Pettis, you got to give it credit to him. He stuck it out and found a way to win, and win quickly. And now they're going to give him T.J. Grant. So talk about
that. I would say after the first 3 minutes, it was all Henderson in my book. I mean, I think he was controlling the action no matter where it was, and then when it went to the ground, I thought it would go even better for him. And I'll say this much, he picked up a fan with me by being such a gentleman, not only in admitting the fact that he tapped, and I guess it was a verbal tap, because that could have been a very ugly scene. Now, Herb Dean had commented afterwards that he was grateful that Benson was honest about it, but he also recommends that in the future, wait until Herb tells you to stop. But Anthony was a gentleman, Benson was a gentleman, and I hope he's not hurt too bad, and I'd like to see him do it again sometime. So that was that. But Anthony, my God, what can we say? There's going to be a load for anyone on the feet or on the ground.
Yeah, and, you know, for a guy that's known for his dynamic, the way he went into that fight, he was going to win by whatever way he could, and that happened to be the way.
So much for jiu-jitsu being obsolete. You know, you keep seeing these threads about how jiu-jitsu is just not what it was and it's useless. Well, I would disagree.
We have Josh Barnett dismantling Frank Mir, as sort of the both of us predicted probably would happen. First round knockout. From the knee.
Yeah, my comments on that, I think there was some there was some controversy about the stoppage, but I don't think it would have mattered. I mean, maybe it was a tad bit premature, but not enough for me to make a big deal out of it. And I just don't think it would have mattered long term, in my opinion.
Yeah, if he doesn't get cut, I don't think it's too long. Maybe one or two more fights before Mir is done if he keeps losing like that. And it was coincidentally, I should say, the third loss in the world, from what I read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he always has some reasons and some explanations. I won't call them excuses, but like in this case, he said he dropped to another knee to try to get a better underhook. I don't know, it was something that sounded pretty far out to me. But bottom line, he's just not getting the job done. He's just not getting it done, period.
And here's one that was kind of a shocker to me. Chad Mendez beat Clay Guida by TKO in the third round, 30 seconds in. That was an interesting fight.
Yeah, the end result didn't surprise me at all, but the fact that Guida with a cement head was actually stopped, that was impressive. Again, Dwayne Ludwig has done a great job.
First time ever in his career that he was knocked out, right?
First time. So all I can say is Dwayne Ludwig is whatever he's done with those guys. It's one of the biggest transformations I've ever heard of. Just an amazing job he's done.
Yeah. And we had Ben Rothwell, another sloppy. Took out Brandon Vera pretty easily there. That was also in the third round. A lot of back and forth there. 2 minutes in, though, knocked him out with punches and knees. And both guys were locked.
I was watching the fight with the crowd, and some people were commenting that he looked like something from Night of the Living Dead or The Mummy or something like that. You know, how Rothwell just kept coming forward with his hands open like he wanted to get one of those movie throttle chokes on him, you know. And
I tried to strategize a little too much. You know, he acted like he knew the fight was going to have to go three rounds for him to win.
He just seemed impervious to Vera's strikes. I mean, Vera in the first round, I think, did a pretty good job. I liked his movement. He was in and out. He was fighting smart, but it just didn't seem to have any effect at all on Rothwell. I mean, he just kept coming, and someone had made the comment after the fight that imagine if Rothwell were an angry drunk in a bar. what a nightmare that would be. I mean, how do you stop this guy unless the whole bar's armed? And even then, you know, it's just so Well, hey, more power to Big Ben. I mean, he got it. How about that dance that he did, conjuring up whatever he was conjuring up? That was fairly interesting, too.
Yeah.
So, very entertaining, huh?
Yeah, it was definitely a good card all around. We also had Dustin Poirier beat Eric Koch by unanimous decision. I really didn't watch that one all too closely there. Felician Thibault beat Jamie Varner in a split decision. It was an interesting result there. Both guys fought pretty hard. Kim Elliott beat Louis Godineau by unanimous decision. Hyunjoo Lim beat Pascal Kraus. And the other guys from the same gym there as Pettis. Pascal Kraus went down by a KO in the first. We had Chico Camus versus Kyung-Ho Lam. Camus won by unanimous decision. Noah Pelele, a guy we were supposed to have on here one of these days, he beat Nikita Krylov, and I think of course, Dana White had to say something. When Aya Quinta beat Ryan Couture by unanimous decision, the second fight of the night, I guess Dana White came back and said Ryan Couture doesn't have Randy's chin. I don't know if it was a jab at him or saying the good thing, but he's staying on board anyway. But, yeah, we had a good transition since Strikeforce. Anyway, the first fight of the night, Magnus Seidenblad beat Jared Hammond. So that leaves us last night's results. Big win for Glover Teixeira over Ryan Bader. Pretty much demolished him. 2 minutes and 55 seconds of the first round. He got the TKO. And he looked pretty decent there.
Yeah, I mean, he got rocked, but he hung on. I mean, getting rocked by Ryan Bader is no disgrace. I don't know if Bader got a bit over-anxious, but I don't know. This just kind of makes you wonder where Bader's at now, if he's going to fall into that role of gatekeeper, because this was almost a must-win for him, the way I was seeing it. I mean, his record is... Well, what is it, 8-4 in the UFC, I believe. Now, I can't believe he's had 12 fights already, but he just, in these big ones, he just seems to come up just a bit short. I don't know what the missing piece of the puzzle is, but too bad for him. But it looks like Glover's in a great position just to sit back and wait to see what happens with Jones and Gus.
And you had to know that one was kind of coming because Glover was from, like, 30 minutes away or something, 5 minutes away from the stadium, so. Crazy like that. He was pretty close to the neighborhood, so he was the hometown guy there. We also had Ronaldo Souza, who didn't waste any time taking out Yushin Okami. TKO in the first round at the 247 mark, and you'd think with Souza's armbar reputation, he probably would have got it that way, but... He just stormed right in and took Okami to a different level of playing field, I guess.
Yeah, now that is an example of being well-rounded, because I agree with you. I mean, I was looking forward to the ground game, but it just didn't come to that. Beautiful right hand, right on the money.
And just the way he was striking him on the ground, punching him in the head there, vicious shots there, fast and hard, and just totally... demolish this guy. And it's the top 10 guy in the world, dude. You should know Kami. He's no slouch.
Yeah, he had not been an easy fight for anyone, really. He took Anderson to the second round, and I just did not expect it to end that the way it did. I mean, I'm not shocked that Social won, but it was just the way it happened.
So that pretty much makes him one of the best converts from Strikeforce, I think.
Right.
I'd like to see a few more of those guys do well, but so far a lot of them have run into a brick wall in the UFC. But Souza is a different story. Turned out to be a good co-main event there. Then we had Joseph Benavidez beat Jussier Da Silva by first round TKO. Knees and punches there. That was a pretty decent
Just another example of Dwayne Ludwig's influence. just can't. I know I sound like a broken record, but he deserves every bit of praise for this.
I didn't really watch much. And Natal beat the ever-living crap out of him. It didn't look like he had any game. Just tossed him all around the cage. We also had Piotr Hallman beat Francisco Trinaldo by Kimura submission in the second round. We had Ali Bagoftanov versus Marcos Vinicius Morguez Pantini. That's a tough name. I don't wonder if Michael Buffer read that all out by himself. Or Bruce, should say. Ali versus Marcos. Ali won by TKO in the third round, 3:28. We had Nilsson Sousa. I don't know if he's any relation to the other Sousa there, but he beat Felipe Arantes by split decision. And we had a technical submission rear naked choke in the Lucas Martins versus Ramiro Hernandez fight. That was a pretty intense fight. I liked watching that. I did see that one. Martins came out and just locked up that submission like you wouldn't believe. Good fight. Elias Silverio versus Joao Zeferino. Elias won by unanimous decision. Keith Wisniewski lost to Ivan Drugic by unanimous decision. We don't have another big UFC event until the 21st. I think we've got some Bellator going on before then. I know not tonight. I know we've got a lot of sports we're competing with tonight here, guys. We're going to step it up.
Yeah.
We got Yankees Red Sox going on right now. We got the debut of the NFL coming up at 8:30 here. It's tough going here for our live listeners. But we do have Jimmy Quinlan from The Ultimate Fighter coming on at 9:15. And he's a New England guy through and through. Was on the last episode, or not the last episode, but the last season of The Ultimate Fighter. So he's going to give us a little rundown about that experience. Went pretty far, especially for a Massachusetts guy. I don't think there's been a Massachusetts guy on there since Kenny Florian that got as far as he did, you know. So it's good to see. Let's see what else we got. What do we got for boxing coming up this week, Tony?
Well, let's take a look at that. I'm still a little bit annoyed about more Friday night fights until January.
We got Monday night fights now if you have Fox Sports 1.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Hey, the man likes to go out there and try to push and make some money. So let's see what they got local coming up. Next local card is actually next week and next Friday in Chester, PA, which is a little bit, it's not much of a hike for me. It's only difficult for me to make it down the road. This weekend is what, the 6th and the 7th? This is going to be good.
Well, before we talk about the schedule, we ought to give a little bit of a tribute to the latest fallen boxer, Tommy Morrison. We talked about it.
Yeah.
Email here, but not on the show. He just died, 44 years old, Sunday night.
I'm glad you brought that up, Rich, because I did want to step back and talk about that. And I grew up watching Tommy Morrison. When I was first really getting back into boxing, back in the late 80s, early 90s, is when Tommy was getting on the scene. And he started fighting on ESPN, and then I think he took some fights on USA, but primarily back at that time, he was fighting on ESPN a lot. And my dad was following him, being the great nephew of John Wayne, and my dad, was a fan of John Wayne. Lori took the nickname of the Duke, and, you know, next thing you know, he, after, you know, a handful of fights, he's going to do Rocky V. And that's what really piqued my interest, you know. I was watching, I was a Kemba fan because of my dad, but then it's like, oh my God, he's going to be in Rocky V. Coolest thing in the world. And one fight I remember, they were going to take, they wanted actually footage of one of his live fights, and but they really wanted a knockout. One of the few times he went the distance, you know, for a guy that had, I think, like 48 career wins, 42 of them were knockouts. And Cam was a guy that he's a decent fighter, but he's not a world beater, and usually he got stopped. Tommy put him down and just couldn't stop him. It went the sixth-round distance. That was, I think, in, like, 89 on the Sugar Ray Leonard-Roberto Duran undercard in Las Vegas, Duran and Leonard's third fight. And then Rocky V comes out. You know, he plays the role. Then he really became popular. And I remember years later, Dr. Cox was in Philadelphia at one point, and he kind of crossed paths with Tommy during, like, one day filming. And he was saying he saw him going to the hotel with, like, four girls. And it's like, oh, shit. And the reason I bring that up is the night we found out that Tommy was HIV positive, it was my sophomore year of college, and the teammate was having a party over the house. Mike Tyson was fighting Frank Bruno, and he was having a party over the house, and it was right before that when it got announced. I think it got announced in, like, late February, and then this fight was in March, because Tommy was on there as a guest commentator. And I was like, oh, my God, look, it's Tommy Morrison, he's got HIV, and that's what Dr. Cox told us the story. He goes, yeah, you know, we're not in Philadelphia, and I crossed paths with him, and they're in the hotel, and nobody expects. You know, Jesus Christ. But, you know, and as sad as that was, I mean, I was always a big Tommy Morrison fan. Really, I was, I think, just turned 15 when he lost to Ray Mercer. And I thought Tommy was going to win that fight. And we interviewed Ray. Ray told us about that fight. Tommy was hitting so hard with body shots that Ray was in the ring farting all over his face. I got to knock his head or I'm going to shit my pants.
Yeah.
But at the time, you could see, you know, Tommy was 2 tenths in that fight, and he just ran out of gas. Ray knocked him out. Highlight reel knockout. But Tommy came back from him, and, you know, he never had a great chin. And he was defensively deficient. And sometimes he would, you know, get out of shape or whatever. But the fact of the matter is the guy had heart. He was one of the few guys that ever won a fight with a broken jaw and, like literally the first round on against Joe Depp. Did have a big win over George Foreman, and I mean, you got to give the guy credit for that. And Ronnie Floyd was one of the less significant fight of his career, and literally only had two or three fights after that because of the HIV diagnosis. But he didn't beat by long throws and respect pretty bad. He's already been knocked down two or three times. And he was sitting in the corner, and they wanted to stop the fight. And I remember him saying, "Tommy, your right eye's closed," and he said, "I still got my left eye." And eventually the fight got stopped. It was a few months after that he was diagnosed with HIV.
HIV doesn't exist. Did you listen to that?
Yeah, he was saying it doesn't exist and all that, and then he had a couple fights back in the 2006-2007. But they weren't sure, like, how legit the blood tests were, if they were being flown, like the blood was being flown somewhere, and they weren't sure if it was actually his blood. But I think it's proof that it does exist, and sadly, he did have it. But, hey, you got to give the guy thanks for a lot of great memories. Whether, you know, you like the role in Rocky V or not, you know, still. Mm-hmm. And whether you like Rocky V or not, which is always seen as, like, the weakest of the litter. And it's his fighting style. Wasn't the best. And but he was always entertaining, and he always fought his heart out. When he went in there, you know you were going to get entertainment. You weren't going to get.
I really enjoyed his last interview. It was a very interesting perspective on his career and I just kind of felt really bad every time somebody called up with a joke call for him to, you know, scream about AIDS or something stupid. But he handled that very well. Everybody he put on the spot, and he was giving him a chance to explain his position on HIV. And who knows? I mean, he's not that crazy to say something like that, but, you know, with him, there was never really any documented on-paper tests that they, you know, really put out there. And the way he described finding out and being shuttled out of town was very interesting in that audio interview, one that I shared with you guys. And it's on Blog Talk Radio. I think they're claiming the audio interview ever with Tommy Morrison. But he talks about everything, and right from when he started in the Tough Man circuit, and then he had to fight his own brother in the Tough Man circuit. That was pretty crazy, and he won. He's just an interesting guy all around, and the one of the more interesting parts of that interview is how he talks about getting selected for Rocky V. They interviewed like 600 different people, supposedly, and he ended up getting the nod because they liked, you know, the way he represented himself, and he could articulate words more than anybody else they interviewed, I guess. And
he said he was was very unpopular, and the guy was getting a lot of problems. And basically, they were giving him carte blanche to, you know, be a little physical in there. And somebody got cracked. Somebody got cracked.
Yeah, well, interesting guy all around. We'll never see the comeback he talked about, obviously, but, you know, he'll always live on in highlight reels. And he had an interesting perspective on life in general, and, you know, this whole HIV thing, it sounds crazy on the surface, but he really researched a lot of the science behind it. It's just interesting to me that they could never get a hold of that doctor that they said was getting injected with HIV. I don't know if that's such a very true. You can never get a hold of the guy. How can you rely on his information? Found it on his windshield. Kept saying that. Found the pamphlet on the windshield, and that's what he believes from then on. That HIV is not dangerous or whatever. And from the story you sent me, Tony, it sounds like, you know, they were saying that it was some kind of an operation that he had that really left something in there they weren't supposed to. The autopsy to see if it's HIV is the cause of death. Maybe that'll be the final nail in the coffin, literally. Anyway, another guy retired from the MMA world recently. Sean Sherk, just the other day, just decided that he's all set, all done. Finish his career. What?
Didn't we interview him too?
Sean Sherk. Yes, we did, because he was actually involved with the Zients thing, where he said one of his Zients supplements had the steroid in it that he got popped for. We had him on the show, and we asked him about that. I remember now, because he said he wanted to revisit that test, you know, see what happened there. We did talk to him, because I remember I also did a highlight reel for him that's still on YouTube on our channel. And I just kind of spliced it together from different. His career, according to this piece anyway, peaked in 2006 when he dropped to 155 pounds and fought Kenny Florian for Jens Pulver's vacant UFC Lightweight Championship. The first time the title was brought back to the promotion since 2004. I don't know what they mean by that. Anyway, maybe they didn't have the title for a while back then. But I really didn't follow him in 2006, so I wouldn't know. Started in 2006, really. Anyway, Sherk beat Florian, and it was a unanimous five-round decision. Not sure, but that might have been the fight that Kenny Florian was faking he was drinking Zion. That might have been a one on one. But anyway, he defended his title against Hermes Franca. Then he was stripped of the title and suspended after failing a post-fight drug. And that gave him a 420-day title reign. Complete. Got back from suspension, and he got beat by BJ Penn. Lost by TKO at the end of the third round in UFC 84 in 2008. And he never really got another opportunity to fight for the belt. Closed his career with a 2-1 mark while raking in 2 Fight of the Night bonuses. And he last fought 3 full years ago, winning a close split decision over Evan Dunham. And apparently had a lot of injuries. So that had a lot to do with it, I guess. But anyway, he's going to work with a company called Training Mask, which I know sponsors a lot of fighters. I've seen it on a lot of their shorts. And he's also getting involved in real estate investment. Pretty smart idea. So that's about it there. And, Tony, we were going to get to boxing. What do we got coming up for boxing this weekend?
Looks like we got a fight card. Interesting. It's Seth Mitchell. You know, he had that revenge win over Jonathan Banks. Not impressively, though. It's a very, very boring fight. And now he's fighting a guy that I don't know if it's possible to be boring against. That's Chris. Not sure what chin he's got, though. I mean, he got smashed pretty good by Banks the first time, and then Banks even had him hurt in the second fight. He's 26-1, 19 knockouts, 1 draw. He's fighting Areola. So it always depends on Areola, what shape he comes in. Now, Areola's coming off a loss to a very impressive prospect, Bermain Stiverne, who even knocked Areola down. And one of them. So, no real shame in losing to him. So now, Areola, trying to come back off his loss. 3rd-3 with 30 knockouts. So, for that fight, he was 247. He was in the 256. 250, 256 were range for a while. Then he was getting down in the mid-230s, and now he's getting back up into close to 250 again. So, the hottest 50 will be best when he's in the 230 range. So, we'll see what JP comes in. That's a big.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
All
right. Okay, I can hear you.
Lost you there for a second. So, what else we got? Is that the only big card we got going on in boxing?
Yeah, it was the only real big card.
Wow. He's rejecting to Roy Nelson's hair and grooming ahead of their UFC 166 bout. He says, the thing about the beard is it doesn't seem to be well kept, so I'm going to request that there's a rubber band on it and that it comes straight down, Cormier told fans in Milwaukee last Friday. So what is he, Lou Albano now?
Yeah, Lou Albano.
Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation will regulate the bout. They do have a rule stating that each can present a tidy appearance.
Well,
it's going to be interesting to see how they all enforce that. Anyway, Cormier seems to be implying that he'll ask the Texas Commission to intercede and ensure that he is tidy. He says, also, I'm going to ask that they put his hair in two plaits off to the side, like pigtails. Part it down the middle, plait it on the sides. I don't want it all in my face. So,
you know, that is a horrible visual I'm getting now of that hairstyle on Roy. Oh.
Bitching about everything. Anyway, let's see what we got. How about that? I didn't even get to see that, Tom. What did I miss? Big day for women's MMA, right?
Okay, you were fading out. Did you say again, Rich?
How about that episode of The Ultimate Fighter that I did not get to see?
Oh, my. Oh, where to begin? Well, when, and you'd seen on the advertisements when Misha came out and Rhonda was a bit confused. Well, she actually was extremely upset because she initially thought that she was off the show when Misha said she was a guest. Yeah, so Rhonda was highly upset. And during the fights, it was kind of awkward because Dana was sitting, you know, how he normally does. He was sitting between the two of them. And he was trying to get some kind of, I don't know, like friendly banner or maybe not so friendly, but he was trying to lighten the atmosphere up a little bit and get some interaction. And Rhonda was all business. She was just taking notes and wasn't saying too much. But the interesting thing was at the end when it was time to pick the teams, Rhonda won the coin toss. So, as you know, you can choose either the first fighter or the first fight. So Rhonda said she wanted the first fight. And turns out, I think there was a method to her madness because Misha's friend, Juliana Pena, I believe her name was, that's obviously who Misha chose first. And I don't think that she was considered the best girl in the house. So Misha, you know, being loyal, went with her friend. So then Rhonda picks the girl who is the favorite, the odds-on favorite, to win the whole thing. So naturally, when the first fight comes up, Rhonda picks her girl to go right after Misha's first pick. She says, we're going to start at the top, and we're just going to work our way down. So it's a big gamble on Rhonda's part, but if it works, it's going to be pretty demoralizing. And then there was another fighter, Timmy, can't think of his last name now, but Misha wound up picking him, and he was saying, well, and he was picked toward the end, even though the guy had a good fight. He was picked toward the end, and he says, well, maybe she hasn't heard of me, but I haven't heard of her either. So I don't know if the guy just had an attitude problem about being picked late or if he's just a malcontent, so I think that Cupcake's going to have her hands full. So it should be pretty entertaining.
All right. Yeah, I only saw bits and parts of it, but I'll try to get more on it. Wow.
Yeah, and as far as the fights, you know, a lot of them fought, there was one just dreadful wall install. And it's kind of because they just showed highlights of it, and it was almost and Dana gave maybe the best pep talk he'd ever given, with the exception of, do you want to be an effing fighter? But it was he says, you know, some mornings you get up and you just don't feel well, and maybe you don't feel like you're going for it. He says, forget it. Tomorrow you give everything you've got. I mean, he really did everything he could to get everyone to give everything they could. And he got a couple wall installers, and Dana says, well, the only thing I can say about that fight is I don't have anything to say about it. You know, and there got to be kind of a sameness in some of them. But, you know, because when you see fight after fight after fight of people that you're not familiar with and haven't seen much, you know, kind of got a little blurry after a while. But I think the fun will begin next week.
We will see. I don't know how I missed it. I couldn't I don't even know if Fox Sports 1 is available even in my area, but I get it on frontrowsports.eu, my favorite site for watching any kind of sports online. But the thing you got to deal with there is there's a lot of pop-ups. Got to close pop-up ads every 5 seconds just to watch one video. And then the stream will freeze, and so I had a lot of issues with that last night. Pissing me off. But anyway, I actually was so interested in watching The Ultimate Fighter and the UFC Fight Night 28 there that I tuned in Tuesday night trying to watch it. I was on Wednesday night. Tuned in one night early. Well, why isn't it coming up? It's listed on there. Oh, today's not the 4th. Anyway, it's football night too tonight. Kick off the football season, and I'm interested to see how Peyton Manning and Wes Welker are going to do, especially since I have them on a couple of my fantasy football teams. I'm going to start playing that again. Got a couple teams out there. A lot of football guys are using MMA too these days. I keep seeing stories on the computer here.
Yeah, and I remember a few years ago, Teddy Atlas was working with the New York Jets when Eric Mangini was their coach, and he was working with mainly the defensive line. I'm pretty sure. I don't think it was the offensive line, but yeah, I found that pretty interesting too. So,
yeah, I think the Jets can use a whole lot of something right now.
Yeah. I don't know. They're talking about he might come back to the Patriots, but they got rid of him for now. Who knows? Anyway, we got about a half an hour to kill, and I don't have any more news items. So, what do you guys want to talk about?
Well, you go ahead, Tony.
Go ahead, Tom. I'm going to give you some interesting tech tidbits. So, go ahead.
What do you got?
Well, I don't know, Tony. If you got the Ring magazine with Mayweather and Alvarez, and if you have it handy in front of you. I found the degrees of separation between Jack Dempsey and Vladimir Klitschko fascinating. If you don't have it, I can see if I can find my copy. That was. Do you have it anywhere near you now?
So I didn't do anything. My favorite was somehow compared like a 1982 flyweight to a current heavyweight.
Let me see if I can find mine. This was all just pretty much heavyweights, but it was a fascinating. Just obsessed with the 6 degrees of separation thing. So let me see what I can find here for us. Okay, we there?
Yep.
I'm here.
Okay, because I have it now. I just need to flip the page here. This is a fascinating edition of Ring. Got into even some history of where Canelo Alvarez's red hair comes from. Going back to the Irish and the Mexican-American War, come off on some weird topics. Okay, now, Jack, it says, degrees of separation between fighters of the past and their counterparts today. This month, Jack Dempsey, the first Ring heavyweight champion, to the magazine's current heavyweight title holder, Vladimir Klitschko. and this is quite a little tangled web here. Jack Dempsey fought Jack Sharkey, who fought Joe Louis, who fought Joaquin Marciano, who fought Archie Moore, who fought Muhammad Ali, who fought Larry Holmes, who fought Ray Mercer, who fought Vladimir Klitschko. How about that?
Nice.
Yeah, and I know some of those flyweight to heavyweight are pretty interesting also. And you can get into these different weight divisions, like in MMA. The fact that BJ Penn had moved it up so much, fascinating stuff.
Keep going in and out of Tom. Is everybody still there?
Here.
Okay.
Tom, you there?
Now we're back. Yeah, we just went out.
I don't know what happened there, but it's pretty intense stuff. The Ray Mercer story kind of cracks me up there about fighting in the ring with Tommy Morrison.
Yeah, apparently Ray Mercer beat him in the amateur ranks also. Maybe it was one of those, I didn't know that. So maybe it was one of those things Mercer just kind of had his number, but...
Hey, we're back.
What did you do now?
I don't know when we cut out or why. But we got cut off, so we're back. Tom will be back in a second there, but I was just basically breaking down my thoughts on the undercard fights for the big fight, September 14th. Floyd Mayweather versus Canelo Alvarez. And if you missed the part where I talked about the wrong people fighting each other, then that's good. But it's going to be Garcia versus Matisse. Good fight all around. We got EJ Smith fighting Carlos Molina. And Pablo Cesar Cano fighting Ashley Theophane. So, pretty good stuff. See if we get Tom back. Not yet. Anyway, I'm popping over to Box Rec to see what we got over there going on. Going back to that Tommy Morrison thing, too. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that interview. But
I haven't, not the way my work is.
Over on Blog Talk Radio there, they have what they claim to be the last interview of Tommy Morrison. And a lot of people were pretty vicious on there, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know Tom was saying that the other day that No matter what you tell about the guy, it's like, now is not the time to really be vicious about it.
Right. See what we got going on here. All right, we're going to get the psychic back on.
Hello.
Psychic Tom.
All right, we're back.
Only you can tell us not only the future, but what was the last word you heard on the show since we cut out from you.
Oh,
we talked. We dropped off the air there.
Yeah, we were going in and out so much, it was, where were we? Oh, one thing I wanted to mention about the interesting contestant on The Ultimate Fighter last night, there was a girl named Revelina Berto. Now, I'm sure the name Berto rings a bell.
Yeah, that pissed me off. I was watching that fight right when it cut out on me, and I didn't see the result. I didn't find out what happened to her.
Yeah, that was a surprise. She was grounded and pounded, stopped. She was stopped by this gal that had a 1-3-1 record. And I know that Jessica Rakosi used to box, and she had a fairly good boxing and kickboxing background. But she wasn't doing too good in MMA, but from the Fighting Berto family, what a surprise that was. It seemed, since it just shows anything can happen. You never know for sure, even me.
Bring it up on this, Tom. Yeah, from the Berto family. She was a trooper, too. She was getting in and out of them. And from what I saw, she won on that. I think. Can everybody now? Hello.
Yep, I'm here.
All right. Just waiting for all this stuff to load here and trying to navigate BoxRec and catch
up. Yeah, before I became unmuted, I know we were talking about Tommy Morrison and the last interview. I think that's sort of where we left off at. And I got about halfway through it. I didn't have time to get to the end of it with some of the, but like you and Tony were saying, that some of the calls coming in, I mean, I just seen some of the stuff I was reading. And it's like, does it really make you feel that much better to put someone down?
Yeah.
Of all times, I mean, I finally got so fed up with it that I just started fantasizing about key locks and stuff. I had to quit reading it. And like I said to you guys in the email, I mean, think about the man's family, if nothing else. I mean, even if it was someone that I had had a personal situation with that I absolutely hated, I'd have to think, this is just not the time for it. You just wonder, what in the hell is wrong with these trolls? And I shouldn't let it bother me like that, but...
Worse if the guy was like, can you come down here and have sex with my aunt and give her AIDS? Like, give her a break, but...
Yeah,
He said, listen, I don't have AIDS. I supposedly have HIV, which doesn't exist, so... You got to say his point anyway.
And what Tom was just saying, a few months ago we had never a fan of his father, and I've made that perfectly clear in the number of years I've been doing the show. Never a fan of his father. The first thing that I think we all said to Hector when we got him on the air was let us as a group express our condolences and the loss of your father. There was no, your father, was into drugs, and that's why he got killed, and it was this and that, and he wasn't a good fighter, and he didn't deserve the name Macho. I wasn't a fan of the guy. you know, I always thought, you know, he had more of like a run around the ring style and, you know, was a little bit more mouth than he was action. But besides the point, you know, the man, you know, tragically passed away. And, you know, even if it wasn't his son on the air, and we were just doing a, you know, a dedication, you always going to say, I hated him, and who cares if he's dead? No, that's wrong. You know, in a way, we're all in the same fraternity together. And then, anyway, think of him as your family.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
And it's just, I just don't quite understand that mindset of these little midget human beings, little tiny midgets, you know, that are so judgmental. And I mean, I just have to, you know, the old cliche, he is who, what is it, he's without sin, cast the first stone, something like that, or I kind of turned it around, people who live in glass homes don't throw stones. I mean, who the hell are they
right.
to make judgments like that? I mean, okay, so he lived an imperfect life. Well, you know, join the crowd.
Hey, he was in more movies than his detractors in that clip, so.
Well, look what he accomplished. I mean, I heard all the rumors back in the 90s, like, you know, he's got a fight coming up 2 days before, and he's in the lounge of the hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning picking up women and stuff. I mean, I now, was it true? I don't know. I didn't know him. But the whole point being, yeah, he lived a wild lifestyle, but look what he accomplished. He had a version of the heavyweight championship of the world. How many people can say that? Case closed.
Right. Credit for it, but you know, you could say he kind of started the whole MMA trend. Look at where he was in the only Rocky movie that ended in a street fight.
Good point. Good point.
Touch me and I'll sue.
Yeah.
That guy was clearly based on Don King. Played him all. Anyway, do have a little bit of boxing story here. We got Matthew Hatton just called it quits, believe it or not.
Really?
Their career for him. I don't have the story right in front of me, but according to this, called it quits. We'll get to that in a minute. Got a pretty interesting card over here in Denmark. One of the biggest and best female fighters in the world at welterweight, Cecilia Breakhus, is fighting. She's 22-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Oxandia Castillo, who's 12-0-2. So somebody 0 defeats, you're going to have to go there. Castillo's got 9 knockouts. Breakhus has 6. This one for the WBC, WBA, and WBO female welterweight titles. And we got a couple intercontinental middleweight titles on the line for the guys in the main event. Middleweights, 12-rounders, Patrick Nielsen, 19-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Patrick Majewski, who's 21-1 with 13 knockouts. In Poland on Saturday. Did you hear they came out with
not?
Just happened the other day. I think I got it on our blog. Let's check that real quick. It's the American Boxing Association or something. They just got sanctioned by the Association of Boxing Commissions, I guess, the ABC. Pretty easy to remember. ABC. But they make all the boxing rules across the country, and they basically are coordination of different boxing organizations. So we're going to have new belts now, the American. Nobody from China will get the ABA. Hopefully. We've seen that a lot the other way around. Let's see, we got a fight down in Mexico on Saturday between Moises Fuentes and Luis De La Rosa. Fuentes is 17-1-1 with 8 knockouts. De La Rosa is 22-2-1 with 12 knockouts. That's the interim WBO flyweight title. Also on that card is a co-main event super bantamweight fight between Tomas Rojas, 40-14, 40 wins, 14 losses, 27 knockouts to his credit, one draw, fighting Enrique Bernache, who's 20 wins, has 20 wins, 5 losses, 11 knockouts. See what other big cards we got. Yeah, there's another one in Mexico on Saturday. Bantamweight's Hugo Ruiz, 32-2 with 29 knockouts, fighting Julio Cesar Miranda, 8-2 with 29 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBC Continental America's Bantamweight title. Say that 10 times fast.
Yep.
And another female fight here. Flyweight's Irma Sanchez, 25-6 with 7 knockouts, fighting Katia Gutierrez, who's 18-3 with 4 knockouts. Very rare to see the females with that many fights. And then fighting each other on top of that, it's pretty impressive. But that's a couple of female fights here that are in the co-main event position this weekend. Let's see what else we got. Here's a fight from Glasgow, Scotland on Saturday. It's going to be a pretty interesting one. Main event is lightweights. Ricky Burns, 36-2, with 11 knockouts, fighting Raimundo Beltran, who's 28-6 with 17 knockouts. And that one is for the WBO lightweight title. And then the co-main event, cruiserweight Stephen Simmons, 8-0, fighting David Graff, 10-0. Simmons has 4 knockouts, Graff has 7. That's for the vacant WBC International Silver Cruiserweight title. So, those are the top 2 cards over there in Scotland. We got a fight in Maryland for the WBC USNBC Super Middleweight title on Saturday. We got Philip Jackson Benson, 12-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Scott Sigmund, 23-4. Plantez Fox, who's 11-0, one draw, 4 knockouts, fighting Zane Shah, who's 5-1, 3 knockouts. And as you mentioned, we have Seth Mitchell fighting Chris Areola in the big fight out in California this weekend. Rafael Marquez fighting Efrain Esquivias? I don't know. I need to go to name pronunciation school on that one. And Rico Ramos fighting Carlos Ivan Velasquez. Pretty good. The featherweight Ronnie Rios versus Jose Angel Barranza fight there. Rios is 21. Barranza is 36, 27, and 2. 28 of his own knockouts. But the Mitchell versus Areola fights for the WBC International Heavyweight title and the WBO NABO Heavyweight title. See what happens there. And Mitchell's 26-1 with 19 knockouts, one draw. Areola is 35-3 with 30 knockouts. And the Marquez fight at featherweight, Marquez is 41-8 with 37 knockouts. Esquivias 16-2 with one draw and 9 knockouts. And I think we're into still on Saturday here. Ronald Hearns, 26-4, 20 knockouts. He's fighting at the Horseshoe Casino in Cincinnati, Ohio. But guess what, Tony? There's an open spot against TBA, so I think they need you to go to Cincinnati. Right, Ronald Hearns, you got to get down to middleweight.
Yeah, that would be the main problem. And problem number 2 is I can't even make a fist.
Oh.
Like the drawback, but the getting the middleweight would be even worse.
You'll be all right. They're going to...
We need the
fist
anyway, right?
Anyway, I think we're going to be into Sunday here in a minute. Got Jimmy Quinlan coming on in a little while. Just want to get everybody ready for that one. He's got a big fight against Luke Bondole up in Maine. He fights later this month, I think the 21st September. We'll have him on to talk about his experience on The Ultimate Fighter, whatever else he wants to share with us. And as I was saying, Matthew Hatton probably quits. He's been in boxing for 13 years. And, of course, he is pretty much in his brother's shadow most of his career. So his brother retired. And he had a few big fights. He really didn't make it... To the championship level. Didn't stay there anyway. And calling it quits. Not a big surprise there. 13 years is quite a while.
Oh,
leaves
also,
the sport with a 43-7-2 record, by the way.
Also, Rich, while I'm thinking about it, apparently Dana White has said that it looks like Stefan Struve may never fight again because of the heart condition that he has.
Yeah, I read that today. I actually put it on my status, too, on Facebook somewhere. So.
Yeah, that's just have to hope he has a full recovery. I'd like to see my buddy Stipe get a rematch with him. But Stefan is always exciting. I mean, you know, he was just a gentleman, good sportsman, and, you know, he was exciting. Either he's getting knocked out or you're getting knocked out. I mean, that's, I think, the kind of fighter a lot of people really like to see. So hopefully he's going to be back.
Yeah, that Mark Hunt fight didn't do him too well. Should be
no.
A fight he has to bow on. Especially not good for him. And, man, that was a tough situation there to come back from that and then find out you have a heart issue. So, tough luck for him, literally.
He's a tough guy. If anyone can come back, hopefully he can.
Or if he doesn't come back to fighting, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen him do any combat. What's next for a guy like that? That's one of those problems that we have to look at in the UFC. You know, what happens when these guys get seriously injured? And what's going to happen when we have this big retirement pool of fighters and they start having these issues? Like the NFL just had a big lawsuit settlement with their head injury issues. Something like $800 million to these victims of concussions and head injuries and, you know, the related situations that occur. So it's an interesting thing to look at. I know that another guy is dealing with some kind of heart issue. He doesn't know whether he's coming back or not. It's Dan Hardy. And that's another thing where, unfortunately, you have to kind of look at steroids, too. Does that have a role in that? You know, I'm not saying either guy has a history of it, but, you know, who knows what they're doing in their training regimens that create these conditions or worsen them. It's not an easy career, boxing or MMA. You have to put your body through a lot of shit. And, you know, you don't always have that option to rest for a while when you should. That's the key thing. So that's tough news for a guy that young, too. He was going to be around in the UFC for a while, I think, and yeah, that was just one of those things. He's come back in fights, too. That was one of his staples in the UFC, is that his first few fights, he could be cut up, beaten down, you know, just looked like he was on his last breath, and he'd come back and he'd win the fight somehow. And he did it a few times. Hate to see a guy like that, girl. But anyway, that gives us the perfect transition time. We're ready now. Jimmy Quinlan from Mass. Do I still have you guys there? You're being mighty quiet.
I'm here.
Okay. Tom. Can you hear me now, Tom? Says he's connected. Tom. Are you there, Tom? What happened? Tom, are you there? I'm going to disconnect you, Tom. Disconnect. He's on hold.
I'm here.
There you are.
All right.
Your microphone was off. Were you
there
screaming?
There we go.
Got Jimmy Quinlan coming up.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, Jimmy, this is Rich from Fight News Unlimited. We're trying to get in touch with you for the show here tonight. We'll give you a ring back in a couple minutes here, give you a chance to get this message, and remind you about the show tonight. Thanks. Jimmy, we'll have to see what Jimmy's doing. I don't know. Give him a minute. He needs a minute. But actually, dealt with him personally. There's no agent involved, no PR guy. It was, hey, Jimmy, email Rich, set this up, you know. That's what they told him.
Yes.
So that's one of the nice things about MMA is these guys are very accessible. I was surprised, actually, he's not still fighting in the UFC. I know they gave him at least one shot after the show, but sometimes, you know, win or lose, they don't give guys a chance to make careers off the Ultimate Fighter if they don't keep winning, you know, their first two or three fights. So I don't know if that's what happened.
Well,
with him,
you know, I would say, though, he's young enough. All it takes is a couple good wins, and he'll be right back. You know how that goes. I mean, I believe sometimes they'll even tell him as they're cutting him, hey, just go back to the smaller shows, have some success, and you'll be back.
Right. We'll see what happens with him. He could make it to Echo. New England Fights is a good company. Just gonna ring again. Might be thinking I'm a telemarketer with this. This is not one of those answering machines where it gives the guy's number.
Hello?
Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. We got Tony the Tornado on the line and our resident psychic Tom Padgett.
Good evening, Jimmy.
Nice. Come on, guys.
So how's it going with you? You got a big fight coming up here in Maine, right? Against Luke
Bond. Yeah, coming up in 2 weeks here.
What do you
know
about?
Pretty good. I just got on training, so I literally just walked in the house from training just now.
Oh, awesome. So, what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight like this?
To me, really, at this point, it was just being in top shape, you know, just making sure that I'm not getting tired in fights. You know, always things to learn technically and physically, be stronger, faster, all that type of stuff, but I have a really good base, I think, you know, with wrestling and jiu-jitsu and evolving into the MMA game more and stuff. So my biggest thing is just making sure that I'm not tired. So,
I'm saying the whole time is it's here.
Yes, exactly. And I don't want to become a coward.
Yeah.
See, you were on the big show, The Ultimate Fighter, there. Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
That's great. You know, that it was three professional fights to fight in the best in the world, and you know, it catches up with you because you can't you can't really fight the best guy in the world, like that quality of competition. You can't fight guys like that week after week and expect to stay healthy and stuff. So, well, it was an awesome experience. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of injuries and stuff you don't see on the TV, and like I had concussions and all kinds of things. I messed up my neck and my shoulder. And
well, when you look at it, it's really the closest thing that they have now to how the UFC first started, with having three fights in one night.
You know, honestly, I'd rather do them all in one night, you know, because your adrenaline's still going and stuff. So if I'm going to fight three fights, I'd honestly rather do it all in one day. It's kind of like you have that big fight, you get the crap kicked out of you. Like, even on the Ultimate Fighter, I won one of my fights there in the second fight after getting in the house. And really got beat up pretty bad. You don't really notice it, but then all of a sudden the next day and the day after that, you know, everything starts to sink in, and you realize you just how banged up you really are. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, you got to cut weight and make weight and fight again. Banged up, and your adrenaline's still running, none of that pain has really set in. You go back out, do it again. But to some degree, I think that would almost be a better way to do it than to be doing it every weekend.
Yeah, you sound
sorry, that even the guys that come out winning it, we'll talk about how much of a grind it is. It really is a tough thing to do. I mean, I've been through wrestling seasons, and I've been through a lot of different competitions and tournaments. I think it's one of the tougher things you have to go through, is being put with that kind of pressure and, you know, find millions of people on TV, you know, all those people are going to be watching. It's a different kind of pressure than anything else.
Three fights, and then they went straight to the show finale, which was live a week later, you know. So I always thought that was a bad idea, you know, if there was any way they could make it longer between fights or fix it somehow, or, you know.
Well, Stuff Live is also a 13-week season, whereas we did, everything you saw was actually happening in 6 weeks of real time. It just spread out over 13, whereas at least in Tough Live, they did it over an actual 13-week period, so it was a little bit more time for them, where they only fought on Fridays. We were fighting like Tuesdays, and then you could fight the next Tuesday, and you know, the fights were happening very quick right now. You never knew. That was the hardest thing for me, is, you know, they told me I'm fighting Tuesday, and then I get 3 weeks off and then on this day, but we didn't know. So it's kind of like I have to be ready twice a week to make weight, because you never know when someone's going to call your name and try to fight. So
for a guy with your limited experience, what was that like coming on the show? Did a lot of people kind of look past you, and were you surprised yourself how far you got on the show?
No, you know, I to me, honestly, I think, you know, barring some of the injuries, I would have done a lot better. Even like when you look at the fight I lost against Josh, you know, there's no reason I can't really hold him down there, but there's a lot mentally going on with me, and I had there's stuff like motivation wise, I was dealing with a lot of different injuries, and much pressure and things like that. So being experienced, and your guys look at it and like, oh, you're only 3-0, but they kind of knew my background in wrestling. And I was, even like the guys on my team, a lot of them were saying I was the guy that was going to win the whole show and stuff, just based off training with them and stuff. So that word kind of spread, that people were kind of talking about, like, you know, he's maybe not the most well-rounded, but nobody can stop his wrestling and jiu-jitsu. So I don't know, like, how are you going to beat him? And especially after like the Clint fights, doing, because Clinton was kind of just smashing me with some elbows, and that was a fight that a lot of people just kind of like, well, if Clinton couldn't stop him if he wanted to, and she did, what do you actually have to do to beat that? So kind of, I think my inexperience technically in the fight game was kind of not as big of an issue, because they saw that Clint was ahead in wrestling and jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it was definitely just a huge group of guys that just unbelievable talent, probably the best crew to ever go through the Ultimate Fighter, period, you could argue, but at least in the last.
We all 14 of us, kind of, when we got to the house, we kind of, after a couple of days of training, we're looking around and we're like, hey, did you think you were going to come out here and just steamroll everyone and you're realizing how good everyone is? And everyone's on the same page where you watch the past seasons and we all thought the same. We watched those, like, man, I would win this season so easy. And right. Then when we got to our season, we're like, oh, man, it's kind of bad luck. Like, there's actually some really talented fighters here. So it's kind of funny when we all sat down and then we started talking and we're realizing how good all the guys in the house were.
The one thing I always had a problem with about the show was how they don't have a matchmaker. They put it up to the coach. And sometimes you get in situations where these people are purposely trying to set up mismatches.
Yeah.
And that was really a problem this last season you were on there. But, you know, I've seen it in the past where these guys literally get wolves, you know? It's like somebody, maybe the other team knows this guy's injured or something. They go tell the other team they got a mole. Next thing you know, a guy that's got a big disadvantage and the other guy knows it. And that never happens in real fights, you know? These guys get match made and, you know,
that's when you're all kind of signing up for them, you know? And like, people talk about those moles and stuff and, like, talking to other teams, but when you're actually in there, like, you guys all live in the same house. Like, there's really not a ton of secrets. Like, we didn't know exactly when people were hurt, but you can see, like, someone like Bubba was walking around the house completely sucked out, checking his weight every day. Like, we knew he was hurting for his weight cut or stuff like that. You can't really hide that because you are sharing a living space.
Right.
So, I mean, there were, like, we didn't know about Josh going to the hospital with his leg and stuff like they did, but for the most part, it's hard to keep a secret in that house because it's not like you guys are living in two separate spaces. You sleep in a couple of years.
Experience, isn't it? The fact that you not only have to fight every week, but you also have to lose the weight, right?
Yeah. That was even, like, for me, I was way lighter than I normally would be. And they looked at me as one of the smallest guys in the house. Basically, they got my weight all the way down, so I didn't want to have that issue. And someone like Bubba, he came in huge, and he really had a tough time staying down. So he got, like, a bad look on the Ultimate Fighter because, you know, he didn't look like a good fighter, and he kind of looked like he was whining, complaining all the time. But Bubba was actually one of, like, the nicest guys there. And it was just, he was miserable cutting his weight all the time and stuff. But, you know, when people ask me who got the worst, like, it was easily Bubba because he's a great guy and very respectful, but just when you're cutting weight all the time, you're going to come across on TV like a little bit of a jerk. So,
like a couple weeks into the season when it was just starting to air, and I had a connection over there with the Fox people, and they gave me an interview over the phone with them. And he talked about how, well, from week one to week two, all his friends and enemies even came out of the woodwork and just came after him after some of his statements, you know, because of the whole ambush episode and him going to the coach.
He told us, too, like, he was very, very nice to live with. Very respectful. He would come down, he'd just be like, you know, you guys, like, behind the scenes when I do my interviews, you guys are going to hate me. Like, I talk a lot of crap, like, I tell it like it is. And I respected it. I was like, you know, I'd much rather you come down and tell us what's going to happen than think you're a great guy and go home and realize you've been talking crap behind the scenes. So he's very upfront about the way he kind of was, and he didn't try to hide anything. I thought he was a great guy, very good to live with, and no issues like that whatsoever.
I really thought he could have won the whole thing. I mean, at certain points he looked really good. He was definitely the most experienced guy in the whole thing. Even lately with his UFC fights, he has all the talent. He just can't put everything together.
Yeah, that's his biggest thing, just putting off the other mentally doing it. But they talked the whole time, even the producers, the cameras, everyone on that was involved with that show. It was like, the show was a coin flip. Like, if we do this show 14 times, we'll probably get 10 different winners. There were so many kind of little things, like, you know, if Uriah got put against a grappler early in the competition, he probably loses earlier. Different matchups, like a lot of, like, Clint, if he Clint fights anyone except for me, it's his first fight, like, there's so many matchup things where if anything had gone a different way, the entire season would have been different. So it's kind of a big there wasn't a clear person that was dominating the whole season, which I thought was awesome. I was like, if you have a different winner.
Right. Oh, it was definitely entertaining, too, with all the little house issues and stuff. And nobody got thrown out, so that's always good when you have a season where somebody gets thrown out of the house.
Nah.
Well, speaking of that, too, what was the house life like? What don't we see on the video cameras that that we'd be surprised about going on in the house?
Not a ton, to be honest. You know, the house life is very boring at times. You know, a lot of it's sitting around waiting to go to training. We come home, and a lot of it's cooking. We're kind of 14 guys in the kitchen trying to cook food, and everyone's eating healthy. And then we're sitting in the hot tub. Every night, we basically sit in the hot tub for like 2 hours, 3 hours, talk, sit at the table and play cards. You basically see whenever something exciting happens, it's basically showing TV show because it's very. Involved. It's kind of the same thing as anyway. If you hang out with like your buddies in college or whatever, and they're just sitting around busting each other's balls. Like that's kind of what it becomes. You just sort of pass the time like that, and you really don't miss much. It's a lot of sitting around doing nothing.
Well, I was definitely rooting for you through the whole show. I'm a Massachusetts guy, raised in Dorchester. So
awesome. I appreciate that.
Cool to see you back up here in New England. What do you think about this New England Fights group? I've put a lot of stuff out on my website about these guys. I follow their circuit, and sounds like they have some pretty good guys.
I hear good things. It's pretty rare. I haven't been to a fight show from a promotion, but being up in Maine, I haven't had a chance to actually go to one of their shows yet. But I always hear good things. I see a lot of people show up to the venue, and Maine has an awesome crowd. And even like when I was going through the fighter stuff, I had a lot of like kind of diehard people from Maine. I would, every week they'd be messaging me online and tweeting at me. And I know Maine has a very strong MMA following. So I'm always hearing good things.
You know what? Sanguine to try to get a show there somewhere.
That would be awesome.
So what's your ultimate goal? Do you want to make it back to the UFC at a certain point, or are you just trying to build your career? What's your hopes for the future here?
Right now, making it back to the UFC is always the ultimate goal. I mean, if you're fighting, you want to be in the UFC. I was just there in my last fight, and I know that I need more experience and stuff. They said, they'd love to have me back. They liked me. They liked to see what I had, but there was nobody on the UFC roster with less fights than me. I was the least experienced guy there. So I was talking with Joe Silver. So he just wants to see me get more experience and get a couple fights on my belt. And if I do well, I'll get a chance to come back. I'm still, that's several fights down the road. I know that no matter how good I look, if I have a dominating performance through an amazing fight on the 21st, that doesn't mean I get a call back to the UFC. They want to see a couple numbers. They want to see me win 2, 3, 4 fights in a row and just get my record up a bit. So I'm not thinking too far into the future. I'm taking it one fight at a time. I've done a lot in the last year or two, so I wouldn't mind taking a little break after this fight as well and focusing on coaching and training, helping a lot of other guys. I am going out to England after this fight. The next week, I'm flying out to help Luke Barnett from the Ultimate Fighter train for his fights. I'll be out there for a month with him. I'm not thinking all about myself right now. I'm going to get through this fight and then kind of reevaluate and see where I want to go from there. Take it one fight at a time.
Yeah, Luke's a great guy. I interviewed him too. He loves to talk and. Just an amazing story. He was probably one of my favorite characters on that whole show there because of the way he just kind of came out of nowhere and literally lived in his gym.
he's awesome. So he's like owned a fashion store or something and just decided he wanted to fight and just moved into the gym. And it's almost unheard of the guy that's trained 3 years from doing nothing. And just in the UFC after 3 years. And he does well. So it's kind of really impressive. Put in such a short amount of time.
I felt so bad for Gilbert Smith when they put him up against him in the first fight.
Yeah, right away. Like I got really close with Luke right away. Like, I helped him warm up as far as to get in the house, and he really appreciated that because I'm like, I'm fighting for my life to get him up in the house at the same time he is, and I was warming him up and helping him with that and everything. So we built a connection fairly early, and I felt Luke moving, so I was glad we were on the same team. And, like, just feeling him, like, to take him down and things, like, he looks like he was tough because his length is so tough to take down, and he can really use his leverage and body good. And, you know, my wrestling was definitely the best. You know, I have to kind of really be going after to get good takedowns on Luke. And when I put Gilbert, I guess I'm like, what are they thinking? I'm like, there's no way Gilbert takes Luke down. It's just not going to happen. And sure enough, in the fight, Gilbert gassed himself out. I was like, yeah.
It's kind of sucks, you know, in that fight I was thinking, why don't you just stand and slug with him? You'd be better off, you know, but then as soon as he did, he got knocked out. So it sucked both ways for him. It's just styles make fights, and that was a bad fight for him. But.
Yeah, you can't pick the shortest guy. Luke said that a lot. Like, I don't think it ever aired, but he's like, John Jones should know how this works. When you're tall and lanky, you pick apart short guys. Like, John Jones is a tall, lanky guy. Like, Gilbert was not a good matchup to fight Luke. But, you know, it was really good. And we were happy for Luke to get the win, so.
All right. Anybody else want to ask a question? I feel like I'm hogging this one.
Okay. Well, Jimmy, you really did a great job explaining all the stress that it has to be in that house and the mindset you'd have to keep going through that. And, you know, there's an old cliche that fighting is at least half mental, you know, because a lot of times people think it's technique and conditioning and all that stuff's important. But you know from experience, if your mind's not right, forget about it. Now, do you have any specific little mental things that you do, like in addition to your physical training?
Yeah, I do a lot of visualization. I mean, some of the stuff that Dale actually talked about on the show was stuff that, you know, I had talked to him about before was stuff that I had always done for wrestling. And he probably did as well, but like the things where you're visualizing the entire fight in your head a lot. And, you know, you're not seeing yourself dominating a fight because that's not realistic. I mean, that's best case scenario, but why would you prepare for best case scenario? You prepare for, you know, a war. So you're going in there and you're seeing like your takedown don't work and, you know, you're not getting your strikes off and you're battling through it. And in the end, you're always winning that fight, but you want to be able to mentally prepare for a war in your head. So, I mean, that's kind of you're going over that over and over again in your head. And that to me is the biggest thing, just to see yourself losing portions of the fight, but you're always winning in the end. So things like that I think are very important. It's stuff I always did in wrestling. I never, when I'm visualizing for wrestling, I'm never going out blasting double and pinning a guy. I'm going out, you know, he's shooting on me, we're sprawling, he needs to get the takedown, I'm escaping right away, firing back with my takedown, you know. It's a war every time, but in the end, you have to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, I really think you've got the right mindset going forward. And like you said, right now, you're just focusing on one step at a time, and that's the way to do it. Definitely the way to do it.
I remember the biggest thing for me wrestling in high school was I won the JV State Championships one year at Quincy High. And they had them at my school. I kind of just got into it to get into it. It was my first year of wrestling. And I ended up finals, and I just laid back on the mat and was looking up at the lights in the roof of the building, and I got so relaxed, and then they just threw me right into the next match. And I pinned the kid with a cradle in like 20 seconds, my fastest pin ever. And I got a nice trophy and everything out of it, JV State Champ. And I ended up, senior year, I had to wrestle at 170, even though I weighed about 155, because we didn't have a 171 pound. He ended up going JV, I went varsity. And I didn't even end up going to the state tournament, because in the regionals, I ended up getting sixth place. But the guy who won the 160-pound weight class was a guy who bumped up earlier in the year and fought me, and I beat him, so it was kind of a disappointment knowing that I could have been in the States by that time. But, you know, that's the team sport part of it you got to deal with in wrestling. But in MMA, it's all individual.
Yeah, it's still the same type of thing, though. You know, you need your team because you can't train alone in any way either. So having good training partners is the same type of thing, but at least that way in MMA you can make your own name. You have to bump around for the team. I think like MMA is as much of a team sport as anything where you can't train on your own. You have to have a team behind you to actually succeed.
And teach you a couple things. You can just watch them or work with them and pick things up from them. You know, especially with all the different styles mixed martial arts have. And, you know, I look at teams like Jackson's camp out there in Arizona or New Mexico. And I saw a documentary, actually. We had the guy that produced it on the show a few weeks ago about that whole mentality down there. And it's not just one guy. I mean, Jackson gets a lot of the credit, but there's a lot of different guys that come into that gym that don't ever fight. They don't even step into the octagon, but they're experts at different crafts,
yeah.
Black belts, different areas. And
that's true everywhere you go. You know, there's guys in the gym that are experts in their field, and they'll never go out and compete. But, you know, they're some of the best guys to train with, but you know, they've never had to fight themselves. But you need those type of guys in the room.
Right. Sometimes, like in the situation where Jackson was trying to get George St. Pierre to forget about his pulled groin in a fight one time, sometimes it helps that you've never had a fight because you don't know how bad that hurts to tell a guy, you know, stick it up and drive on. You can just say that, you know. You don't have to look back to the time it happened to you, and you would never believe someone saying that to you, you know. You just says it like it is, you know. Suck it up and deal with it, you know. Don't worry about your damn groin. Do it. But as far as technique goes, I know you're a big wrestler. You did a lot with that in the Ultimate Fighter, but what would you say is your greatest strength in the sport, and what are you trying to work on?
From MMA or wrestling?
MMA.
Obviously, my best strength is my wrestling and, you know, my ability to control the stand-up portion through takedown. So I'm just, my biggest thing is, like, you know, my stand-up is if I'm in a room, I can stand with everyone. You know, I feel good. I'm very confident with my stand-up. I've been doing it a long time. But, you know, when people watch my fights, everyone's the question's like, oh, well, you know, you need to work on your stand-up. You need to work on your stand-up. And to me, it's just like a confidence thing. I never actually stood and traded with someone in the cage because I could just take them down. So all my fights, you know, just go in, take them down, and that's it. Fight's over. And when I started fighting, you know, some of these better guys like Josh and Dylan, and just dominate them, you get a takedown, and they get back up, and then it's kind of like mentally, like, oh, shit, I got to get taken down again. And I now have to learn how to stand and trade with guys, and I do it in the room all the time, but you step in the cage, it's a different animal. People that have never done it don't understand, like, you know, there's a confidence that you need to build, and that's something most guys do through fighting amateur fights and kind of getting in wars, and I unfortunately, like, never had a war until I got to up in the Fighter House. Like, I'd never even been punched standing up until I was fighting in the UFC.
Right.
Like, my local fights, I just double leg guys, pick them up over my head, slam them, and the fight's over. So my fight standing up was against Clint Hester and the Ultimate Fighter. So it's a tough place to gain experience in the UFC. So that's, you know, I kind of look forward to being able to come back and, you know, be comfortable on my feet and actually use the skills that I have to showcase on TV. Because even like my local fights, my earlier ones, you know, I had like really like significant ground and pound and was putting guys away, and then this huge leap in competition happened, and, you know, on top of, like, the injuries and all that, you know, it made me just kind of want to get through the fights versus, you know, really go out there trying to finish, and that makes a huge difference when you're in a cage locked with someone trying to fight them, because you should be going after a finish, because otherwise someone's coming after you. So, you know, it's just, my weakness is kind of, I think, in just my experience or my inexperience, and then I need to kind of get in there and open up a bit more and actually show the entire skill set that I have.
Right. Good answer there. And it's tough, you know. It's, there's so many different ways a fight can go. It's like a twist of plot novel, you know. You can take it anywhere you want if you're good at it. And we had a guy on years ago that talked about how MMA was becoming a striking game. And as long as you can control your takedown defense and keep it on the feet, you know, at that time he said you could almost, if you can prevent the guy from using his wrestling. But above all the disciplines, I think wrestling, on the scorecards anyway, is the most valuable. Because you can think about how many fights have you seen where the decision turned on who got a takedown at a certain point. You know, it didn't matter or didn't at a certain point in the fight. If I got a takedown in the second round, he won the round, right? You know, especially at the end of it. If it happens at the end, that's the last thing the judges remember. So it's just always been kind of intrigued about how important wrestling is to the scoring in MMA. And being in Massachusetts circles, too, coming up to develop Fight News Unlimited, I went to a lot of fights down there in Plymouth at the town hall there and saw a lot of fights that when I was sitting right next to the judge, cage side, came down to a takedown. Whoever gets this last takedown wins this fight. And it happened, more than people know.
Yeah.
But it is kind of, I think, becoming a striker's game, too, because the crowd really does love seeing those type of finishes.
And that's what the UFC pushes for a lot, too. I mean, you know, obviously they want complete fighters, but wrestlers aren't typically the ones selling tickets unless you're, like, a Johnny Hendricks fighter. Even, like, Johnny Hendricks isn't wrestling his fights. He's one of the best college wrestlers ever, and he just knocks people out. But then, like, a George St. Pierre, at one time, was the biggest star in the world. Obviously, he's still a huge draw, but people are now getting sick of his style because he just basically is wrestling, guys. You know, people get sick of that. People want to see the striking game. And, you know, it works for some guys, but you see other guys, you know, come up and they are wrestlers and they try to play the striking game and then they lose a couple fights and you never hear from that again. But I think that's kind of the direction of the sport is, you know, you got to be able to win the fights with your wrestling, but at the same time, you got to be able to stand and bang and win the stand-up exchanges because UFC pushes to that's what the bonus is for guys who can get in fights and brawls. And, you know, they're looking for exciting fights, not guys who are going to.
System, though, is like a double-edged sword. I mean, is that kind of encouraging people to hurt each other more than they should? I mean, obviously, it's a violent game, you know, if you're supposed to go out there and beat the other guy up. But sometimes I wonder, like, what kind of effect that has on these fighters, you know, going out trying to knock people out instead of fighting a smart fight. You guys like Chuck Liddell coming out and saying the biggest mistake fighters make today is that they don't give it their all in their fights. They hesitate and they don't put it all out there on the line and go out on their shields like I did. You know, but
yeah. Well, I think that's a huge problem is that when you're someone like Chuck Liddell, of course you give it your all because your job's never in danger. You go out there and you know win or lose, your
right.
job's safe.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's one thing if you go out there and you put it all on the line and you have this awesome fight for three rounds, but then you know, fight of the night, whatever, you're coming back regardless, you're not going to get cut for losing that way. But at the same token, you go out there and put it on the line. Back, so there's really no security. So, you know, to me, I think a step in the right direction is when you sign, like, these, like, three-fight contracts or whatever it is, like, those should be three-fight contracts. They shouldn't be if you lose a fight, we're going to cut you because yeah, guys are going to go in and they're going to fight, like, scared for their jobs. And it's easy to say, well, just go out there and put it all on the line and you won't get cut. Well, yeah. And then you get knocked out real quick because you opened up and I'm cut now because I look like crap. That's a bit different than, you know, if maybe you got lucky and you put on a war for 3 rounds, your job is safe. So I think that would be a step in the right direction is not having as much power to be able to say, if at any point you lose, we're just going to terminate your contract. I think, you know, if you sign a three-fight deal, you should get a three-fight deal. And that would encourage guys to know that, hey, I can go put it on the line. If I have a bad performance, at least I get a second opportunity to put that on the line again.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks because you've got an organization there that's basically being run by mostly a mouthpiece. I mean, Dana White has experience and some agents work experience as an MMA agent, but as far as, like, actual fighting experience, he pretty much has none. I don't think he ever even had a boxing match outside of a gym, you know, at an actual event anywhere, amateur or professional. And you got him making all these decisions and saying all these bad things about these guys who don't live up to it. And sometimes you just, I mean, fighters must want to just turn around and say, shut the fuck up, dude. You never put on a big glove in your life, you know?
I personally, I would never, like, you know, I'm not even just saying it because you obviously you got to treat Dana good because he's the boss and he's the guy you want to impress. But in all honesty, you know, I think he's, the sport is not what it is if it's not the Dana doing what he does, you know. As an outsider looking at it, it's kind of like, you know, maybe you can judge him for that. But, you know, being on the other fighter, you see this guy's life a little bit more and able to interact with him a lot. And the amount he does, and I mean, he would fly in just to, and then he'd be flying to China the next day, and then he'd be back 3 days later to watch the next fight. You know, like, his schedule is crazy, and he's not doing this stuff to go have fun. He's doing this because he's trying to, like, work out deals in foreign countries and put the UFC on the map around the world. So, you know, I would never, as much as, you know, he's in the public eye, everything he says and does, everyone's going to judge and talk about. But, you know, I know that, like, I went out to eat with him, and he wrote a $10,000 tip to the waitress. You know, like, he's not a guy that's, like, thinks he's a big shot and he's going to be a jerk or stingy. You know, guys that put on good fights, like, he takes care of the fighters. He really does. And as much as it's easy to judge him because he, you know, talks a lot, he's very vocal on his opinion. But I would rather have him come out and talk crap about a fighter than never be able to hear from him. Like, if you want to talk to Dana, you can tweet at Dana, and he'll tweet you right back. And if you say something bad, he'll tell you to shut the hell up. You know, and do you think you can go, like, talk to the commissioner of the NFL? Like, you have no choice in any of these guys. So for Dana to be in the position he's in as the head of an organization and still interacting on a one-on-one basis with his fans, I mean, I personally think that's awesome. And, you know, maybe if I didn't get the time, I was able to spend with him and see how he actually treats fighters. Maybe I would have judged him in a different light, but being able to actually kind of talk one-on-one with him and see where he's coming from, I will always defend the guy for that.
Cool. Well, I think that's the nicest thing that's ever been said about Dana White on our show. I really like the guy. I mean, he's a Boston guy. He actually has some history with Maine, too, you know, where you're going to be fighting there. And, you know, he does have some background in boxing, and he got into it, lucked out knowing the Fertitta brothers. But the one beef I have with him is he just, he's bigger than fighters in a lot of ways. And I know he probably doesn't want that situation to be the way it is, but I think sometimes he just takes advantage of it and doesn't think before he speaks. And just, he does a lot of stupid things that just become.
I agree. I mean, he's not perfect, but, you know, that's part of what makes the UFC what it is. It's like,
well, that's part of what makes everybody love the guy, too, is that he's out there. He's a little nutty.
Yeah, that's, you know, the way that he comes out and talks and says things, you know, he fosters that environment to the fighter. So, like, the way, there's no other professional sport where, like, fighters or, like, NFL players aren't just going to walk around and greet their fans, talk to them on Twitter. Like, that social media presence, that, you know, it starts from the top down, and Dana's a guy that he's very, like, vocal about. Get on Twitter, talk to your fans, like, be a regular person. Don't think you're special because you fight for the UFC, you know, like, go out there and show them that, like, we're still the same people as everyone else. And that's what he does. And then you start seeing all the fighters. People come right up to him. When you're out at fights in Las Vegas, we go down, like, you see all the fighters walking here and there. People come up to him. They treat you like human beings and come up, take a picture. You know, everyone's friendly, nice. The environment from the top down is awesome with that, like, person-to-person relationship that they have, which you don't see that in any other sports. Like, your NFL guys have an entourage, and you want to approach them for the picture, and they brush you off because they're too famous to talk to you. That doesn't exist in the UFC or with any MMA fighters. There's no one that I know of. Like, John Jones is probably, like, one of the most famous guys right now. He walks through the lobby, and he'll stop and take a picture with everyone down there. So I think that's something that comes from Dan, as open as possible. Yes.
your most famous journalist in MMA, basically, you know, across the internet at least, anyway, is Ariel Helwani, and he admitted in an interview where he was talking about his own career and how he grew up and started following the sport, and that was the reason why he got into the position he did get into, was because MMA fighters were just so accessible when the sports first started, even more than it is now. But still today, like you said, social media and everything like that. And you know, if we were doing this show on the NFL, I wouldn't be able to get an NFL fighter on here. I mean, NFL player on here every week, even third string. It'd be tough, but...
Usually that could be Dana could be a jerk and no one can access him, or like he's not accessible to fans. And then from the top down, now all the guys at the UFC start to feel like, you know, if I'm in the UFC, I'm better than people. I don't have to answer phone calls. Like, you better pay me to be on this podcast type of thing. And next thing you know, like, everyone just thinks they're too famous to talk to people, and that's ridiculous. And that's another reason. Just like, that is, I think, great that he, you know, he's going to be open. He's going to be honest. He's going to tell you how he feels. And if you want to judge him for it, fine. But, you know, you got to look at the positives of what he does as well.
Right. My biggest beef with him, I think, is just that he has a management by fear look on it. And, you know, especially when you're dealing with people who are taking risks just to pursue this career. And, you know, the fighter pay issue thing, you could see it one way or the other, whether they're these guys that are on the lower tiered fights are making enough or not, you know. The fact that he didn't even come out and say, well, let's take a look at it. Let's see if we can make any changes. He didn't say, well, you know, you don't understand our numbers. He just attacked the people that were criticizing him instead of. Conversation or something about it. He just calls the guys idiots for saying that, you know, $8,000 to go to a fight in Brazil and, you know, fight to show or whatever isn't enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, obviously everyone wants to make more money. But for me, I'm like, I made $8,800 for my fight, and obviously I lost, so I made $8,000 total for that. But the alternative is don't fight for the UFC. And like, I had that option. I didn't have to sign my contract. I'd say, oh, you're not, eight is not enough for me, and I'm going to stay at my job. But no, like, I wanted to go out there and fight. And to me, the money isn't the most important thing to me. And if
well,
I go out and win, I make $16,000. And, you know, when you're getting three fights a year, that's $16,000 three times. That's more than a lot of people make in a year's salary. And so, yeah, it does think when you lose that, you know, then the alternative to that is go out and don't lose and you don't have to worry about it.
I definitely,
even in my position, I left a full-time job as a police officer. I'm part-time right now. Going to work every day. But I've lived, like, awesome the last year. Like, I've traveled all over the world, like, having a lot of fun, and I wouldn't complain for 1 second about the amount of money I was getting paid, because the alternative was to go to work every day like everyone else, guaranteed $40,000 a year.
Yeah, it's definitely an adventure. You know, you got to look at it that way. That's our minute warning. So, Jimmy, why don't you tell us, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to, say hello to, or you want to tell anybody where to find you online?
Just, you know, thank my sponsor, Mike McCandless from Salivation and Smart Powders. The guys at Lowe's on MMA and Mastery of the teams I train out of. Find Jimmy Crash BJJ on Twitter and obviously Facebook, Jimmy Crash Women. And obviously thank you guys for having me on the show as well.
Awesome. Well, we enjoyed it. And,
this has been great, Jimmy. Definitely been great. My crystal ball says lots of good things coming up in the near future, okay?
Thanks, I appreciate it.
And we'll look out for you in the future. We'll hope you get to your goal of getting back to the UFC someday. I definitely think you got a real strong talent base. I thought your character came across real well on the show. Kind of one of those guys that blended in for the most part, didn't stick your neck out, but the scenes you did have on the show, you seemed like a real nice guy, and definitely look forward to seeing you succeed in the sport. You have the right attitude about it, that's for sure. And, you know, that'll go a long way.
Awesome. Thanks.
End up seeing you at one of these shows one of these days. I'm right over here in New Hampshire, so not too far.
Awesome, yeah. If you end up at the show, come over and say hi.
All right, man. Well, thanks for stopping by and hanging out with us here.
Good luck now.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right, folks, so that's Jimmy Quinlan, and we're out of time. We're in a little overtime period here. We passed our 10-second warning. So anyway, that's all I have till next week. We'll be looking to try to maybe schedule Tito Ortiz. We kind of forgot about, didn't get a hold of him yet, but we got his number.
And then we're going to get Tony's predictions. Tony's predictions next week. We're going to get Tony's detailed predictions. I'm waiting. I can't sleep.
He's going to have to shoot himself up with morphine just so he can type. But. All right, folks, that's it. That's all for us. Good luck watching the fights this weekend. I know that there's no big UFC stuff going on, but there's... And obviously, football. You got football back on Sunday, so... For all you football fans,
I got it on now. You know, I just finished my grid around 7:30 tonight. And hopefully I can win some money this year. That'd be nice.
There you go.
I enjoy winning money.
All right, well, thanks to Jimmy Quinlan and to everybody who listened. We'll have, like I said, another guest next week and plenty more to talk about, I'm sure.
Yes, we will.
Oh,
all right, well, everybody, my phone is going to get dead, so until next week.
Yep. Adios, folks.